kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive and here. Yay.
Yes, you are. And you're not alone.
I'm not. We have company.
We do have company.
Do you want to introduce them?
Yes, Joe, is it Mirabello?
That is correct. That is very good pronunciation of a complicated looking last name.
I try so hard, but of terrible posture games, how are you doing today?
I am doing pretty good. It's been a busy week, but I'm doing well.
And why would your week be busy?
Well, we just released our game Mother Gunship. It is out now on Xbox and PS4 and on PC. So it's been exciting right in the launch week craziness. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
I think we all are.
There's no rest with the weekend, though. There's always something to do.
Yeah, especially when you have a toddler. That's what I'm learning.
Oh, boy.
It's like bless your heart.
My wife right now is carrying a lot of the heavy weights because I've been sucked into you know the lead up to launch and then the launch with this. So I've got a lot of goodwill built up with her that I need to goodwill karma that I need to she gets to cash in on later on. So
I can't change that diaper, honey. I've got to play test this game to make sure it's going to work for launch.
Fortunately, the toddler is 99% potty trained now at this point, but it's still things like that. Exactly. Precisely. You got it. But at this point, the launch seems like things are going pretty decent. It's been, the normal like launch stuff, like pushing out a fix to address some last minute concerns that we realized that once, you go from a few dozen people play testing it to many thousands, it gets, some fun bugs that you didn't expect. So, we've had the normal kind of like, resolve issues on the fly kind of situations, but it's been pretty smooth, all things considered. It's been, the reception's been really warm. People seem to be liking it. I don't know if you guys have heard too much about the game. I imagine you have since you wanted to bring me on, but,
of course.
You want to give the quick, spiel about it?
I was just going to say, for the people who don't know what Mother Gunship is, give us the sales pitch.
Sure. It is a randomized first-person shooter, roguelite-ish kind of thing with a really, really, really over-the-top crafting system where you can make your own guns. You can do pretty much all sorts of absurd things with it, like grafting four or five shotgun barrels to each other, adding on rocket launchers, giving bounce modifiers to all the guns. You basically have an entirely modular building system, like playing with Legos, to make your gun. And we pretty much just say there's no limits and then get out of the way of the player and let them do whatever they want. It's a follow-up game to the last game I worked on, which is a game called Tower Guns. And I basically took what worked well in Tower Guns and refined it, and we tossed what didn't work well. And I should mention that it's not just me. Tower Guns was just me. Now I've partnered with the game called a company called Grip Digital, and we've been co-developing this game from the ground up as a follow-up to Tower Guns. So Grip Digital is located in Prague, and I'm in Boston, and we are spending a lot of time on Skype and Slack.
That's fantastic. What made you decide to go for a spiritual successor to Tower of Guns as opposed to a full-on sequel?
It started as a full-on sequel, actually. And in fact, as many people have been pointing out on the forums and on Twitter, the actual executable is still called Tower of Guns 2.
Oh, wow.
You looked into there, yeah. But that's okay. It's somewhere along the life of the project, we realized that what we had on our hands was much bigger than what Tower of Guns, the brand, was designed to be. It was something that was kind of branching out in different ways that we felt like, one, it deserved its own identity. And then two, Tower of Guns, we didn't want to make something that was unfaithful to Tower of Guns. And we wanted to explore a lot of these different things. So it made sense to kind of give it its own life and its own identity. I guess that's the way to put it, yeah.
That's very good, yeah.
Now, I've had very little time with the game myself. I've been, as our listeners know, I've been in the middle of a move. My console has been acting up today. I did put a little bit of time into it. What led to the whole weapon crafting system?
That was something that the co-founders of Grip wanted to push from the very beginning. We kind of knew that Tower Guns had a problem in that it didn't have a lot of variety to its guns. There was a decent number of guns, but you kind of were stuck with one gun at the beginning of the run, and you were stuck with it for potentially up to an hour of gameplay. And we knew that that was a big problem, so we wanted to address it by having some more kind of customization mechanics. And they were pushing hard for something like a customization or crafting system, because they felt like that was something that players wanted. And I wasn't satisfied with doing something that I had seen in any other game. And so we began exploring how we could do something that felt unique, something that felt a little bit more over the top, something that felt a little bit like something we hadn't seen in other shooters. Like other shooters, if you look at like any kind of gun customization type stuff, it's super, super realistic or super, super cosmetic.
Didn't want to go the realistic route at all.
No. we knew we wanted to go a little bit silly, but we didn't know we were going to go as silly as we did. And once we started going that direction, it was like, okay, we're committed to this now. We need to kind of make sure that the story is over the top. We need to make sure that the art is over the top. We need to make sure that everything feels like it's right out of Contra or something, because the guns certainly do.
There's only one real rule with crafting the guns, and that's that the barrel has to be facing forward.
Correct. We tried it the other way. We really did.
Which was, I was kind of surprised, because I was like, man, there were a few times where I tried to twist and see if I could have legitimately made a gun that would have pointed backward and shot behind me as well.
Yeah, it's
just to see if you could.
We had it for a little while. We did. And it seems like it'd be really fun. But there, given the fact that you could build off screen and you could build in all sorts of other directions, you could quickly come up with one of two things that happened. One is that you start getting recoil in weird directions, which is fine if you know how to predict it, but if you're doing it on accident, then suddenly it feels like you're being pushed to the side or something, and it can mess with your input. And then two, players don't see where their shots are going, and they feel like their guns have no feedback, and it hurts the impression that you are actually doing something. So they don't realize that they actually are firing because the bullets are going off somewhere to the left or behind them. And by making them face forward, even if it's way built off the screen, you see that shot come out off of the side somewhere. And so you do get at least some kind of feedback.
Yeah, I know our reviewer CJ was very disappointed that he couldn't have a gun facing himself to shoot himself in the face.
That one's for insurance reasons.
He also wanted me to pass along the message that he absolutely loves the game and he wishes he could be here, but he has, well, he has a job and real life responsibilities.
Well, I appreciate him playing and I appreciate the kind words about the game.
Eclipse Husky in chat has a question. Two of them, actually. First, where are the Tower of Guns weapons and abilities? And second, Steam Workshop when?
Well, Steam Workshop would be pretty awesome at the game. Steam Workshop is a little bit of a logistical hurdle, though, that, you know, it's something I think would be really cool, but it's also the kind of thing that I don't think we could do until we've built up a really decent community that is very numerous, because the investment to get rolling on that is not trivial, and we'd have to convince everyone to be on board, and we'd have to prove to them that there is a good reason that like the community is there waiting it and they want it. And I've been talking about it for a year now, but arguing for it is tricky because of the logistical barriers there. Not something that's impossible, but it's like, okay, can we make the case for this? Or can I make the case for this? And right now, I don't know, because we just launched, but it's going to be more so about in like, once we've cooled off after the launch and we've got our currently planned updates kind of down and out, then what does the climate look like on Steam, and does it make sense to start working on something like that? So that's kind of like where we are with that. But it's not a no, but unfortunately it's not going to be a guaranteed yes either. It's kind of the thing that we don't have planned right now, but maybe if things take off and we sell a million copies, then we could. So everybody who's listening in the chat, all however many there are of you, go out there and buy like 1,000 copies and we'll be good.
Each of you. Give it to everyone.
Yes, give it to everyone. As for the other question about the Tower of Guns weapons, there are some things that are kind of similar in there. Like there's the saw blade, the pizza launcher is kind of there. But like in general, Mother Gunship has a different kind of climate for gun parts. And it's more about the kinds of barrels that you'd see and the kind of projectiles. But there are abilities that are similar to some of the ones in Tower of Guns. Like especially when it comes to the gun mods and how we incorporate those abilities in Mother Gunship. There are some things that probably will never make it into Mother Gunship from Tower Guns. And a good example would be something like there was a special gun you could get in Tower of Guns called the Party Bringer. And it was a bullet that then spawned more bullets that then spawned more bullets. And it created a really weird firework display. And it was awesome on PC. And it was terrible on consoles. They had actually disabled the gun because it was too performant heavy. So I went a little bit abusive with tower guns. And that kind of behavior is something we have to be a little bit more careful with. I want to be a little bit more careful with Mother Gunship. For tower guns, it was just me. I had no ambitions of the game ever being released anywhere other than PC. And so I was kind of like, I don't really care. Performance here is fine. And I was just kind of seeing whether or not people would like what I was making at all. I didn't have any ambitions of it growing into something. Certainly not growing into something like a career, which is what it has turned into. Now with MGS, with Mother Gunship, I have to be a little bit more cognizant of the fact that there's going to be people with a lot of different kinds of PCs, people with a lot of different kinds of consoles, and I need to kind of be aware that being so mean to the performance is not a nice thing.
Makes sense. What about the abilities thing? And also, I need to apologize. My neighbors apparently decided now's the perfect time to cut the lawn. So if you hear a lawnmower in the background, I'm sorry. My neighbors are dicks.
Oh, I think I may have one actually in the background for me too, but it's a couple yards away, so I don't know if it's getting picked up.
No, I don't hear anything on your end, but it might pick up on my end.
That's the way that... Oh, now my phone's buzzing.
On the bright side, your dick neighbors won't be your dick neighbors for long, and you'll have new neighbors to be dicks soon.
Very, very true. They're already dicks. They park in front of our house all the time. It's like we're trying to unload stuff and put it in the house, and we have to park three doors down just to carry things into our place. It's like, hey, people live here now.
Put cones, maybe? Is this off-street parking?
What's it like to have neighbors?
Listen, farm goer.
I'm guessing you don't have neighbors.
No.
I live in a town of 40 people.
Oh, really? Like, I can't think. Like, sometimes that's accurate. Is it really 40 people?
Yeah, it's 42.
Well, that's amazing. So you know all 42 people in your neighborhood or in your town?
I mean, I'm antisocial and kind of a hermit. So, no.
You mind me asking where you are? Because you have a slight, like, Minnesota accent.
That I have never heard it called Minnesota before. I'm in Kentucky.
In Kentucky? It's it's a slight, it sounds like a friend of mine from Minnesota, so it's just a stretching of the O's a little bit.
We've mentioned it on the show in the past, but I had classes when I was in school where they tried to teach us to kill our accents.
Really?
Yeah. So we like put carrot chips on our teeth and said tongue twisters to teach us to like enunciate better.
That sounds like conditioning out your culture to me.
Yeah. Well, when I do the show, I try to like cap it. Joe's heard me on games and I'm a whole different beast.
Oh yeah. I'm waiting for one episode for the full Southern to just come out.
Yeah, I totally didn't get Southern at all. I totally got Minnesota. Like, cause it's like, I hear like Minnesotan, like the long O that happens in there with some of the words that you say. And it reminds me of a friend of mine. And he's from Minnesota. So I was like, oh, I wonder.
Wait until I have to say something with a long ah, and then it will be noticeable.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like, are there sniper rifles in the game?
I was trying to avoid it, Joe. Thanks.
I'm not. You're bringing it up. We got to make you do it.
We do have to know, are there snappers?
Whoa. Maybe we should get back on topic, I guess.
I mean, if you want. So, abilities, is that something that might come back to the game?
Was that one of the questions from the chat?
Yep.
So, we've actually got some ideas in our pipeline about abilities. They're not a priority right now, but they are kind of on our radar. It wouldn't be like the items that you get in Tower of Guns that are like single-use items, but we potentially would do other things that kind of introduce new varieties to the combat. So, mum's the word on that. We've got ideas. We're figuring out on what we want to do. We're figuring out what we would want to do and how we want to go forward. So, if you have an opinion of that, then hop on over to the Discord and be chatting about it there, because that's where we run things by the community and that's where we get the opinion of folks. We have a Discord channel. I guess we could probably, I could probably pass you that link and you could maybe put it,
I could put it in the show notes.
Show notes? Yeah, thanks. I'd appreciate that. I see Nubbins is in the chat. He's all over the Discord. Actually, there's quite a few people from the Discord there, in the chat. So
Nubbins has two questions as well. The first one being, will there be a full crafting sandbox mode?
My guess is that he's not actually gotten to the end game, because there is. He says, I haven't gotten that far yet. Oh, and Eclipse Husky, totally, I see it now. Yeah, there is Nubbins, and it's at the end game, and it's basically exactly what you think it'd be. It's kind of like Endless, only you have access to your entire inventory, and you don't bring anything in or out, and there's no shops. So it's just a place to go play and have fun with your guns.
And just the nice big fuck-around mode, huh?
Yeah, basically it is. But it's definitely a place to build something that's over the top and probably not do kind things to your performance. So we may consider throwing a disclaimer up there in the future.
Nice. And then Nubbin's second question, will we ever be able to get a third-person view of the mech holding the gun?
I'd like that, actually, a lot. How would we do that? We could do that potentially in a couple of different places. But yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. So right now, the one place where we really wanted to do it was in the death screen or the windscreen. So you'd like see the gun there, and it'd be an actual 3D model rather than this like cool screenshot that's static. But we'll probably do other things in the future as well, that places where you can see it. But I'm not sure yet where. But we've got it replicated for co-op, so we have it all kind of assembled and ready to go. There's no reason why we couldn't just stick the camera outside the player a little bit and let you see it. You know, we'd have to do some magic to it, but it's not that much in terms of like getting, because right now the player is hidden from first person view, but you know, we just unhide it and show the camera from another view. So it's like, yeah, we could. We just need to figure out how and where and when, because it's already, the hard work is already done because of replication and because of co-op.
Does that mean that there's the potential to customize your mech and its appearance as well?
Not yet, but that would be pretty mighty. So it's something else that was on our list and ended up getting cut. But we have thought about that one a lot as well. And it would be, I think it would be good to do at some point. So I'm not sure yet to what level of customizability we'd go. But it has been on our table, gotten cut, been back on the table, gotten cut, been back on the table. So at this point, it's another one of those like wish list items that I think it would be really awesome to see, but I can't promise it.
I just want to be pink. That's why I ask.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't? That'd be a pretty cool mech.
Yeller'd be all right.
Yeller? I'm so glad that one came up.
This is my favorite color. We might as well just go ahead and throw it out there.
A lot of the guns right now are yellow by default.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, like if your mech is blue by default, but that's a mistake. It should probably be yellow too.
Yeah.
So
I'd like be down blue. With that. I'd support that.
Yeah, it just should be matched with whatever your gun is, and you should be able to change the color of both of them, in my opinion. So you could just have your guns and your armor both change color to whatever you want. Well, probably not whatever you want. We probably would like outlaw specific colors that look like the enemies. Like, we might outlaw the bright red that they use or something. Maybe not, because we wouldn't want co-op people to think you're an enemy.
That would be funny.
That leads to another question from Husky, who asked, with the coming co-op, are shops going to get bigger than 6 parts?
Or are you fighting for gear? You are fighting for gear in the shops. So the solution there is to not limit number of parts, but to actually have more shops. So I think that's we've played around in the past with the idea of increasing the spawn rate of shops. It does end up becoming a little bit trickier because you do end up like fighting or competing or rushing the shops. But at the same time, you also, it makes it way harder if one person hogs all the parts. So it kind of softly encourages you to play together, because if you do hog the shop, then your buddy will be left with their fists, and that makes it way tricky.
Plus, it's how a many dick people, move.
What's the point of playing if you can't be the dick?
That's a good point, yeah. And there certainly will be people who are complete jerks to each other, and that's right now in our beta. We've got a beta branch with co-op, actually an alpha branch, I should call it, with co-op ready to go, and we're going to be unlocking that for people in the coming days, so people can play it. But right now, that in that branch, you can only play with friends, so you wouldn't at least be getting dicked over by a stranger yet.
Yet.
Right. So, just for the record, the co-op is only going to be 2 people, or will it allow more?
Just 2? Yep, just 2 people. 2 people for now. We thought about having more, but it's already pretty stressful, and it's already pretty gets pretty chaotic and pretty hefty with just 2. So 2 feels like a good duo, a good amount, and it kind of evokes the feeling of like old games like Contra, where you would kind of play together with a buddy and you fight through all these over the top absurd things. So We feel pretty confident that it's that two is manageable on our end. I can't say whether or not three or four players would actually even be fun. It may just end up being too much.
Oh yeah, lawnmower right outside the window now. Hi neighbor. I'm not busy doing anything in here or anything. I have a question for myself.
Yeah.
Where's inverted controls?
They're coming. Though, so they were actually in the demo, and due to some oversight, they got actually pulled out of the build, which is really dumb because it was in there and it should have made it into the options. It is in the next patch. Don't worry. It's actually being presented to, at least last I heard, it had been sent off to Microsoft and it has to go through just their quick checks before putting it live process. And then it will be there.
I'm very happy to hear that. I fired up the game and I started to move around. I'm like, oh my God, I need inverted controls. And I went in the options and it was just sensitivity. And I'm just, no.
Yeah. The heartbreak is that it was there. And well, okay. Here's what it was in the demo. If you were to download the demo right now, if I remember correctly, it's at a higher level. It's like in the menu above and it's just like right there ready to go because it's a pretty important option. And so we're like, okay, we can pull this off because we got the main options menu now. And then we pulled it off of that menu, but we didn't put it in the sub menu or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but we started doing more work to the options menu. And for some reason, it never ended up getting put in. This is, by the way, just on consoles. On PC, it's already there and has been there from the beginning because PC has different options for things. So,
well, it's good to hear that it's coming. I'm very happy to hear that.
Within 10 minutes of that launch button being pushed, it was like, where are the controls? We're like, wait, they're there. And wait, no, they're not. What the hell? So if that's the rockiest of our launch worries, the fact that we were able to fix that and get a patch already ready to kind of go out, then that's a pretty good launch because there could have been a lot. There are actually some issues that we still need to resolve, but that was the first one. And I'm happy to be able to tell people that it's like, okay, the patch is worked on, we're submitting it, and it should just be in Xbox's hands. They tend to have a little bit of a delay before things go live. I don't know how long, but it's probably a few days.
Well, hopefully within the week we'll see something.
Yeah, I originally was hoping by the end of the week, but it may, it's looking right now like it'll be a couple of days into the next one. So
that's good to hear.
So we were talking about abilities. One of the abilities is to be able to do multiple jumps.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys decide that 40 or more jumps was just a thing you could do?
Well, with Tower Guns, I had that attitude. And, you know, like other games will be like, you can double jump. Hooray, now you can jump twice. And I was like, why are we really limiting that? Thinking about it from a gameplay perspective, it doesn't make any sense in a more serious game. It's almost like if you can jump 10 times, why wouldn't you just have a jetpack?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was something absurd about spamming the jump button that felt really fun. It felt at home in Tower of Guns because it didn't happen all the time, but you could get upgrades that did it. And when it happened the first time to somebody in Tower of Guns, they would flip their lid. They'd be like, I have 40 or 50 jumps. How did this happen? What's going on? This is absurd. And so I was like, all right, we're keeping that with Mother Gunship. And that's like the spirit of the game, that over the topness. We want to make sure that players see that more often because with Tower of Guns, you could read the reviews of that game. And I could, like, when that game came out, reading the reviews, I could tell if somebody had played the game for 15 minutes or if they played it for a couple of hours. Because almost always the people who had played it for a couple of hours would comment about something absurd like that. And to a positive effect. So I'm like, all right, let's make that happen faster. Let's make sure that people can kind of see it more regularly. Let's make sure that the entire game encourages that level of silliness. And that's been kind of our mantra through all of Mother Gunship.
Absurd is good.
Absurd is good, and overpowered is good too in small doses. And so like the gun system, every single piece of the gun system was designed to be giving power to the players, but having a lot of checks and balances so that being overpowered doesn't overstay its welcome.
Makes sense. So, Cole, what other questions do you have since you're the one who put a shitload of time into the game?
I did. One of the things I wanted to ask was there's an achievement on Xbox for building a gun with 100 DPS, and I unlocked that surprisingly early, which then led me to wonder, what are some of the crazier DPS numbers that people have put together so far? Because if 100 is kind of like a point of an achievement, but also easily attainable, there's people that are insane, I'm sure.
There are, and to be honest, it's everything kind of blurs together with whether or not a game has come, whether or not the game is in its public release or a beta or the pre-release versions, because we changed so much so quick. I know that I myself have built one on our beta branches that is 2,000 DPS.
How much energy did that take to fire?
All of it. Yeah, it did. It was more like 1,700 or 1,800. It was close to 2,000. It was like four or five railguns with like damage up modifiers. It was pretty absurd. But I also built it using cheats, so it doesn't quite count. I mean, in theory, I could have built that gun in reality by farming the parts and like saving them up and saving them all for that one moment of glory. But I didn't in that particular thing because I was testing something. The most I've seen on camera right now has been like 500 or 600. I've seen more in the crafting range because you could just mess around in the shooting gallery.
Yeah.
And I've seen more there. But in the game itself, I haven't seen more than like 400 or 500 at most for when people have been crafting. So we're starting to learn that.
I think 400 was around my top off too.
Yeah, but I also haven't seen a lot of people doing endless mode, and that's where you would start getting even higher and higher and higher. And you start needing to get legendary parts in order to get much higher. I think that DPS is also kind of a not really useful number in the game. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be better to have an average of DPS and energy costs like spread out and have it be, because DPS is like damage per shot, basically. It would be better to instead divide your energy out over that and say energy cost per shot or per damage. So it would be like, you know, like damage per energy unit. And that would be a better number to give people.
Mm-hmm.
So like you take your energy bar, divide it by 10, because there's 10 spots there. Take your DPS, divide it by 10, and be like, okay, here's the number of the damage you're doing for each unit of energy that you have. And that'd be something better for people to compare the guns against each other directly, I think, a little bit better. Because you could have a gun that only has, you know, 50 DPS, but instead of it actually being per shot, you could fire at a firing rate that's much higher. And so it could be a much more practical gun than a gun that's 100.
That's the way I tend to build. I tend to go for weapons that fire more rapidly, even if they don't do a heavy amount of damage per shot.
Yeah.
But I don't want to... It's all about balancing, like, how you're going to progress with, you know, the damage going in versus... You know, like you were saying, the energy that you're going to use. And I'm one of those people, like, I don't want to pull the trigger and automatically be stuck waiting there for my energy to come back.
We're thinking about ways we can also mess with that, too, in the future. So we've got a lot of different ideas about ways to modify things going forward. And we're happy the game is out, and we're happy that people are responding to it well. But this is kind of where the real journey begins, because we want to, like, take the response from players, and we want to be like, okay, great, here's where we stand right now. What can be better? What can we do to modify this and improve it? What can we do to add to this to make it feel more rich and more enjoyable? It depends on the community, really, and where they feel like the stuff is most interesting. But we are interested on our end in doing quite a bit of more things to the game. It's exciting to work on. It's been fun to see the reactions from people. But we know that this is the beginning of the story, not the like end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a twist ending without giving anything away. What has the reactions to that ending been?
I think most people think it's pretty silly and funny. And in general, I think the reactions have been pretty positive. Good. I didn't write that story with the idea of it winning any awards. but it's been very pleasant. I mean, I seriously wrote that story. Actually, I wrote most of the first campaign story at GDC at like, after showing the game all day and then having meetings all night, I would come back to my hotel room, start work at 11, and then write until 2 or 3 in the morning. Oh, and that was how I wrote that campaign. So the fact that it's getting called out by some people as being some funny, as being enjoyable, or as being even remotely entertaining, is I feel like I'm so happy. I'm like, that's awesome. I love the fact that this thing that I was, while I was... hoping it would be decent, I knew that it was not going to be the reason people play the game. I'm glad that they enjoy it all the same. Even some reviews have called it out, and that's been really pleasant to me.
You have potential as a comedy writer, and you didn't even realize it.
Well, I did write a while back, a long time ago, I did write a comedy book. I wrote a novel, a fantasy novel that was kind of a comedy fantasy novel, back when I used to work in AAA.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Armpit of Evil, if you feel like checking it out. It's on Amazon. It's an ebook. And it's very silly. It's similar kind of humor, silly and irreverent, I guess is the word. And also lighthearted. Writing comedy is really tough because not everyone, I've seen people who say that comedy is funny. I've seen people who say that the writing in Mother Gunship is spot on. But then, you know, there's plenty of people who are also saying like, oh man, it was so cringy bad. It was terrible. This is like the most unfunny thing ever. Like, you get people who just think it's just terrible, like just awful. And you can not please everyone. And I found that the biggest thing you can do is just stop trying to make anyone else think you're funny and just laugh at it. If it's something that you think you'd laugh at, then just stick with it.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely shocked because there were so many instances where I just giggled like a schoolgirl.
Because that makes me happy to hear.
It was just so goofy. And everything, you're faced with a game where there's just a ton of gratuitous violence. I mean, the guns are obscenely huge and the enemies you're fighting are larger than life. But it's just so goofy.
Yeah, and that's what I was going for.
You need that break, or otherwise you're just like, wow, this is awful. I'm just murdering things.
Well, there's no blood, though. There's no blood. It's all just shrapnel and explosions and fire and sparks.
It's still shrapnel.
It still has, you're right. It's despite not being violent, it is intense. Mm-hmm. Is the best way to put it. The reaction it can elicit in players is still a potentially aggressive one, because of the nature of the game. But, I've been careful to make it the kind of game that if, a 12-year-old got their hands on it and was playing it on Xbox, they might feel like they were getting away with something, but then the parents would see it and be like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah. So I can see that. I have kids, and generally when it comes to games with weapons and stuff, I tend to relegate those to late night games that I play when everybody's in bed. Mm-hmm. But this one, I was just like, if they come into the living room, they're just going to see me blowing up machines. And that's not so bad.
That's been my entire attitude with the game, is keep it like that kind of thing.
And my 5-year-old actually was in the room during the birthday party sequence. And okay. She was just enamored by that. She was like, look at all the balloons and confetti. I was like, yes, but you can't play this, okay?
So when your 5-year-old is 10, would you object to them playing it?
I actually have an 11-year-old.
Oh, okay.
I probably wouldn't. I would just be like, just as long as you know we don't point guns at things in real life.
Right. Well, hopefully they're also not trying to combine 4 or 5 guns into one thing in real life, too.
We are rednecks.
We use duct tape.
We can't afford them fancy screws and connectors around these parts.
I don't like the idea of glorifying gun violence at all. And I like to think that this game sidesteps it a bit by being how fantastically over the top it is. Mm. But I do feel like strongly, like, and I played, you know, like I played and loved Doom, and I like first person shooters in general. I've got a long history with first person shooters, and I maybe someday will make a game that is more adult than what Mother Gunship or Tower Guns are. But at the same time, with this level of over the topness, I realized that it was not going to be the kind of thing that I wanted to, like, the people who play more serious games are not like they're looking for a more serious experience. This level of over the topness needed to be coupled with something that was not restricted by violence or by blood or gore or zombies, or like, it didn't fit the narrative of crafting crazy guns. It needed to kind of, there needed to be a marriage of I guess you would say age accessibility with the level of silliness of the game. And, you know, I would not want I wouldn't think that this game would be something that little kids would play. But like, mm-hmm. I said, you know, like if a 12-year-old were playing this, they would maybe feel like they're getting away with something because of how intense the actual combat is. But when you measure it up against most first-person shooters, it comes out super tame.
Yeah.
And that was important to me for this particular game, and for Tower Guns also was the same way. So, yeah, I guess that's, I don't know where I was going with that. That was a long-winded kind of aside, but yeah.
We like asides on the show.
Yeah. My thought process was that I wanted to make something that was accidentally all ages. So, like, most people who are playing the game, it's firmly T for teen, but, you know, like, the younger kids would feel like they were getting away with something.
Speaking of something for the younger kids, Nubbins had another question of if we'll ever get a Staplehound plush.
I would want one of those. Maybe not just younger kids. I think that a lot of people would maybe get a kick out of that.
I'd buy the shit out of one, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Staplehounds are pretty cool. I don't know, maybe. I'd have to talk to my co-developers about that one and see. We haven't even gone down the merchandising road at all yet. I have no idea what the options are there or how it works, or, you know, like, if you happen to know any merchandising people, send them our way. We'll talk to them.
Have you hit up the Limited Run Games folks at all?
I've met them at some trade shows, but I haven't talked to them specifically about any Mother Gunship stuff. No. They do good stuff, though.
I smell a collector's edition coming.
Well, the tricky part there is that we already have a retail partner, and Limited Run does a lot of retail exclusive stuff. And a retail or physical, I should say. I wouldn't want to step on the toes of our retail partner. We work with Sold Out on retail versions of the game, which should be out in August.
Nice.
So those, will be coming at the end of August, along with the co-op update that's coming out.
Well, time to hit up Sold Out and be like, hey, how late into the game could we start a collector's edition?
Yeah, like, are we ready to do that yet? I think that it would be, honestly, I think that a Staplehound plushie would be pretty awesome. There's a couple of mobs in the game that I think could make good plushies. I think that Mr. Wall could make a good plushie as well. He's like this gigantic blue happy face. Not even happy face, just two eyes and like a blue shield that comes and chases you around.
There needs to be like a plushie of the big giant bullets that come flying at your face.
Our version of the Bullet Bill.
Yep.
Those things don't have any eyes, though. Maybe we should have given them eyes. I never thought about that.
Oh, that's what could be in the next patch.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Be like an option in the menu, and you could click give eyes to bullets and click yes. And then like all the big ass bullets. Yeah.
All the bullets suddenly have eyes.
That'd be amazing.
That would be a very interesting menu option. I don't know how difficult that would be to turn on or off.
Well, now you know what you're doing with your weekend. So, without giving away a spoiler for the story, I also want to ask, does the pizza have pineapple on it?
I can't remember how it was in the story. I thought it did in the story. The bigger question is, do the characters like the pizza with the pineapple on it?
That's also important to know.
Yeah. And I think that they would.
We're gonna start a war.
Man, that's just wrong. I don't know.
So I saw the location of where you were when you called me up to call. Is that accurate? Are you where are you based out of, Joe?
I am presently in Sawyersville, Pennsylvania.
Is that near the pizza capital of the world?
Which one's the pizza capital of the world?
Apparently, Scranton.
Really? Scranton's the pizza capital of the world? Yeah, I'm about a half hour from Scranton.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine from Scranton, and he's always telling me, he's like, it's on the sign when you enter the town. I'm like, it's not the pizza capital of the world, dude. He's like, it's on the sign. I'm like, it doesn't matter what you put on the sign.
I don't even pay attention to the sign up there. Everyone knows Scranton for the office now, so.
Yeah. I think it was either Scranton or maybe Wilkes Barre or whatever. I don't know the difference, but one of them is very proud of their, it's square pizza too. It's like pizza that's like in the Neapolitan style, Naples style.
Yeah.
The like flat sheets.
I'm moving to a town called Berwick. They have a bakery called Dalo's, and they make carnival style pizza that's square, and they use American cheese, and it is fucking amazing. And I am so happy I'm moving back to Berwick so I could get that pizza more often.
That sounds really weird. It doesn't sound like pizza to me. It just sounds like a grilled cheese without a top.
Well, it has sauce on it as well.
It sounds like a grilled cheese without a top and with sauce on it.
It's so delicious. It is delicious.
Clearly it needs pineapple to improve.
I've got a lot of relatives from New York City, and so I'm very partial to New York-style pizza. And it's hard to beat. If you get a good New York-style pizza, it's really hard to beat that. Especially if it's like the gigantic pieces that are like, you know, super floppy. It's awesome stuff.
Well, if you ever find your way down in the Wilkes-Barre Scranton area and you want some good pizza, I'll get you some Dalo's and you can let me know what you think.
I tried a couple of times as I've driven by there, because I have driven by a few times and off the recommendations of that friend of mine. And I've been weirdly confused by some of the amounts of sweet onions that are in the sauce by some of the pizza places in that area. So,
yeah, I'm not a fan of sweet sauce. My wife loves it.
There's a different definition of pizza at the pizza capital of the world, I find. But if it makes them happy, then more power to them.
Yeah, as someone from this area, I have no idea where they got that they're the pizza capital of the world.
I don't know, but apparently it's on the road sign or it's on the like town website or something.
I have no clue.
But on that note, I think we've been talking now for about 40 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's been a while. I know you didn't have too much time to share with us. Was there anything you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
Well, I could mention that it's, you know, we launched just a few days ago, but we are also going to be pushing out a patch in August that includes co-op. And so if players are interested in the co-op, it's coming out very soon. If they're interested in trying it early, we're going to be posting on the Discord some beta codes to actually try it out. It'll be, you know, cutting edge. I'm sure there'll be problems with it. So, you know, you have to be aware of what you're getting into. There's like a little button you have to push to make sure that you understand that you're going to getting into something that's buggier. But if you feel like helping us test out what we're up to, then we'd love to have you. And the Discord in general is a friendly group of people. In fact, I think some of them, in fact, I know a few of them are here in the chat with us hanging out. So, thanks to
Steam only, or will that be console as well?
That will be Steam only. Okay. Thank you for asking. The beta branch access, but the co-op update will be on all platforms. So everybody will get the co-op update at the same time. Will there be an NDA? I just saw a chat question come up on the Twitch stream.
Go for it.
And there probably will not be an NDA for the co-op beta, but there will be all over your screen things that say this is the co-op alpha. So if you're streaming, then it's not like it's not obvious.
Yeah.
So, that's coming out in August, and the game is available now. So please forward your folks to it. It's on Xbox, it's on PlayStation, and it's on PC.
And how much is it?
It is $24.99, and there will be a retail physical version coming out in August as well, and that is $29.99.
Now, will that be on all platforms as well? I know a lot of smaller indie games that get physical releases skip Xbox due to their whole print run bullshit that they've got going on. Will it be on Xbox, or is that PS4 and PC?
Oh, as far as I know, it's actually Xbox and PS4 only.
Ah.
I did not think that it's PC. I haven't actually checked the marketing stuff for it, though, but I'm pretty sure it's Xbox and PS4.
Well, it's good to hear it's coming.
I didn't realize
Xbox.
There was a minimum run for Xbox, but...
Yeah, that's why sites like Limited Run Games, they don't have anything for Xbox, because there's whatever the minimum requirement is, it's just not feasible for the games that they put out.
Well, I don't think that that's ever been something that Sold Out has ever expressed to us as being a concern. So maybe we're above that, or potentially maybe they have a different situation because they're a publisher that does lots and lots of titles. So I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But one way or the other, it's been talked about that it'd be Xbox and PS4. So yes, nice. To answer that question.
Very good to hear. So where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at @BlankSlateJoe, or you can follow, and this is probably the better one to follow, at Mother Gunship on Twitter. We have a mailing list you can sign up to on MotherGunship.com. You can join our Discord, which is where our community is super active. So join the Discord, and those will probably be the biggest places, Twitter and Discord, to kind of follow what we're doing and keep track. We also do have a pretty active Facebook group, but Discord is where we're doing the daily back and forth with the people who have played the game and our community of awesome players.
Awesome. Well, Joe, it has been fantastic having you on. I didn't even get to thank you for whatever work you've done on Kingdoms of Amalur. I absolutely love that game.
Oh, so, awesome. Thanks.
As soon as I saw that you worked on that, I had to thank you for it, because that's okay, one of my all-time favorites.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I'll pass that along to the people who worked on it, but I had a very small impact on that. I was on the MMO, and I did a little bit of consulting on some stuff in the project, and I did some work on the zones that were shared between the two. I did some concept art. But otherwise,
That's enough to thank you.
I was on the MMO for the most part, and very, 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 I would say, if you count a normal artist's contributions at like a value of like 100%, I was like 0.1% compared to what the normal artists would have been doing on that project. So it's minimal, but I those guys did a great game, so I am proud of them.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Joe, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around and hanging out. Thanks again to Joe for coming on and chatting with us. That was a really fun chat.
Yes, it was.
And it's a really, really cool game. Like I said, I've only put a little bit of time into it because of my system acting up, but holy shit, is it a blast.
That's basically like your weekend homework, is to play more Mother Gunship, because it is a lot of fun.
Oh, no. My weekend homework is moving.
Oh, right. Well, is Mother Gunship on the Switch?
No.
Shit.
Well, hopefully Sunday I'll be moved in enough to be able to relax and play some games for enjoyment for once.
What's this playing games for enjoyment? I don't understand this.
It's this fucked up thing where you pick a game that you're not reviewing and you sit down and then you play it.
I have forgotten what that is.
Oh, we just played The Division this week. Don't give me that shit.
That is true. We did play The Division. You're not wrong.
So how excited were you to play The Division again?
I love The Division. I hadn't played the 1.82 update. So I actually, besides when I played with you, I also played that with some other friends. It was actually really neat to go back and see the stuff that they added, because it was just so much more content. And one of my biggest reasons for not having played The Division more recently was like, I fucking did it all. I did everything. I completed it to the point that my eyes were seeing things in the orange tones. Like, my whole real world was affected by the Isaac line. That's how much I played The Division.
The what? And
the Isaac line. The little line that guides you where you've made a waypoint, and Isaac says,
take this. That's what it was called.
That's just what we call it. I don't know if it's the proper term. This is what my group of friends called it, was the Isaac line. I played, Latino said in chat, I played it with Justin Roby and Jez Corden on the morning mixer.
Oh, nice.
And I kept them alive.
You kept me alive, too.
I did. That my little box is fierce.
Carried my ass.
And I don't even have like the highest tier stuff, because I didn't go back for all the classified gear when that came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't even have like all the classified gear and stuff. I just have the basic shit that I've been running the entire course of the game. But I have it so min-maxed and like spec'd in so well that it doesn't even matter. It's just insanely good at keeping people alive. That's all I do. Is I typically play with friends who run DPS builds. So I run support, and just everything I've got is totaled around keeping everybody alive.
Nice.
But I do well.
Good stuff. And at least you can return to that game, which is going to segue to news. Haha. There is a game that you're not going to be able to return to pretty soon.
Uh-oh.
The Culling 2 that launched last week is being removed from sale. Have you heard
so
about this?
I did. This is so fucking ridiculous. I should have watched the video. I didn't watch their video explaining the justification, but I'll let you go ahead and fill that in before I start with my opinions.
They released a video statement saying that the game is being pulled from all storefronts, customers will receive refunds, and they are resuming development on the original Culling game and will be rebooting it back to the original game before any of the huge major changes that people hated were made. So it is nice to see a developer man up to their fuck-ups and try to make things right, so let's see how it goes.
I'm sad that it took the money grab that was the Culling 2. I'm worried for the studio that this is going to be one of those things where they just fuck up so bad they can't ever straighten back out from it. Like, they kind of just took a pile of shit and rubbed it on their name, and that's that. Yeah. Can polish a turd, but it's still a turd.
Well, the original Culling was incredibly popular, and then they made a bunch of changes to it that changed how the game worked and pissed everybody off. I've never played the original The Culling, so I don't really follow what the changes made were, but the general consensus is the one update they pushed out just ruined the game, and then they kept piling on top of that update instead of reverting to what people liked about the game. And it seems they're jumping all the way back to the version that people enjoyed. And on top of that, they're going to be making it free to play. So hopefully they can get some customers and people back into the game.
I'd be willing to try it out as free to play. I mean, when it's free, you just fuck it. Why not? So
which is our favorite rating.
It is. I wanted to play the Culling anyway. And then like the whole shebang happened where they were like, we're not making the Culling anymore. Bye. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, fuck you guys too. And I never did. So now it's like, for free, I'll go back and see what they're doing. But I have a pretty jaded opinion at this point in time. And I'm not really holding my breath to like what I'm going to see. So we'll have to, they got some serious, like, mop up to do to make the game.
Yeah, at least they're trying, though. So, you know, it can't hurt to give them a chance and see how it goes.
Yeah. I'll try anything once. Getting me to come back for round two might be a different story.
No. Well, you haven't tried it at all, so this will be your first time.
Right. I'm just sad that my first experience with the game is already going to be jaded with, like, if I run into bugs, I'm just going to be like, well, I'm not holding my breath for that to get fixed, you know? And I don't like to have that kind of mentality. I'm hopelessly optimistic in case anybody hasn't figured that out yet. But I generally, like, I see a game and it something goes bad or there's a glitch or a hiccup or something, I'm like, well, there's potential for it to be fixed. But I don't know that I'm going to go into the Culling with that kind of mentality just because it's already on such shaky ground.
No.
If you've abandoned it once, what's the reason for me to believe you're going to stick it out now?
And because they don't want their studio to shut down.
I don't know. They have a lot of hope. They really have some polishing to do.
I think this is their last chance. If they fuck up with this, they're buried. They might already be buried, but I give them all the credit in the world for manning up to their mistake and acknowledging it and expressing the desire to fix their wrongdoings.
I hope if they don't go under that they at least hire like some kind of marketing advisor or something who tells them not to do this shit again.
Yeah. Hey guys, stop fucking up.
Yeah, don't release a second game after you abandoned the first and then have to turn around and shut down the second one to go back to the first. It's bad practice.
I
hope that other studios learn from this mistake from the wayside.
I wonder if they're going to kill all the servers for the Culling 2, or if they're going to leave it up for the people who did pick up the game.
That is one thing I was about to ask you. What the fuck are they going to do about that? Like, are they just going to kill it and revert everything?
Well, they're refunding everyone.
But, I mean, it's digital. The file's still going to be on people's hard drives and shit.
Yeah. So
they can't stop you from launching something you bought unless they pull the licenses, but that seems a little excessive.
Well, I mean, you could still fire up that Marvel Heroes Omega or whatever the hell it was. You just can't play it. You could start it and stare at the title screen, but, you know, there's no servers for it, so you can't play it. I wonder if they're going to do the same with The Calling. Did The Calling 2 even have a single player element to it, or was it just all online?
I have no idea, but I would assume it's a words, please. It's a battle royale game, yeah?
Yeah.
So I don't imagine there's anything in the way of a single player campaign for that.
I didn't know if they might have bot matches or something that people could still play offline. I don't know. I didn't buy the game, so I don't know.
Mm-mm. Could not have paid me to buy that game.
Well, you could pay me to buy it. If someone pays me $20 and they're like, here, buy this game for $20, I'll give you $20. Okay, fuck it.
It's a figure of speech, but I suppose maybe you could have paid me. I'm poor, I do things, I don't know.
I give you $20.
Catch me when I'm hungry, and I don't know, things might happen.
Come on, man, I suck your dick.
I wouldn't go that far.
Speaking of dicks, Dante's Inferno is backward compatible now.
Yay, penises.
How's that for a segue?
I'm surprised that speaking of dicks hasn't been the segue more than that.
Yeah, that's a really underused segue.
It should just be a natural, like, whenever you don't have a segue, you should just be like, speaking of dicks, and then go from there. Because it's perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, I've solved all of our segue problems.
Yeah. Speaking of dicks. Oh, man. But yeah, Dante's Inferno is now a backward compatible game, and it is also part of EA Access. So all of that stuff that we talked about, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. has now happened. Also joining the backward compatible list is Ruse, R-U-S-E, a real-time strategy game or something like that. I've never played that one.
I think I have that game.
Really?
And I think, I can't remember if I bought it or not. Or if I had a friend who played it just obsessively, he loved it. And I tend to have bought real-time strategy games to play with him. And I can't remember if Ruse was one I bought or one he just tried to convince me to buy.
Physical or digital?
I might have it physical. Like, I have a box with all my physical 360 games in number one's room because she had the 360 for so long. Now number two and number three had the 360, but they don't have room in their room for the box. Hmm. So it's still in number one's room. So I'd basically just have to, like, go sit down and open that box and see what the fuck's in there.
Nice. I tried checking on GameStop to see if anyone around me had it. There was one store in Scranton, actually, that had it. I didn't feel like driving 35 minutes to go buy a $3 game, though.
Is it still $3, or did the price jump up?
I don't know. I should look.
I mean, even if it jumps and it's only like $6, it's still probably worth it because it was, as far as real-time strategy games go, I remember it being a decent one for console. Console and real-time strategy games don't get along in the first place. I mostly played Halo Wars on the 360 for strategy, but I do remember trying Command and Conquer and that didn't work out for me.
Oh, those sons of bitches jacked up the price. It's all the way up to $5 now.
See, you should have went and got it when it was $3, man.
That's almost double the price.
That is. And you could have got pizza if you'd got it when it was $3.
I can get pizza anywhere. I had pizza this morning for breakfast.
I'm a little jelly, but I also had a fine breakfast. So I had a redneck breakfast,
though. It wasn't normal pizza, though. It was chicken bacon ranch pizza.
I love, like, chicken bacon ranch and funky flavored pizzas. My favorite pizza is actually white garlic sauce with spinach and ricotta cheese. That's my favorite pizza.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Spinach.
I'm the only person in my family that actually likes that pizza. And so we buy it or I make it. I just make like a little one that I can eat all by myself. Because the rest of my family is like, the fuck is wrong with you with that? I love spinach. That's just a thing.
No. Anyway, speaking of dicks. Now, speaking of backward compatible games, someone on Reddit posted a picture. They purchased the 2008 version of Prince of Persia, and it was in an Xbox One style case and said it was playable on Xbox 360 and Xbox One, but it's not part of the backward compatibility program. So I'm wondering if that got released a little bit early.
I would hope so. Prince of Persia is so good.
Yeah. I hope so.
I would play the shit out of that again. Whenever I had time to play something that I wasn't reviewing.
Yeah. Which is never.
Never.
Speaking of buying stuff that you're not reviewing, the Xbox Ultimate Game Sale is now live for 2 weeks and includes discounts on hundreds of games. Have you bought anything?
I did. I actually bought a game that I will not have time to play.
Which one?
I bought Virginia. I have been wanting Virginia for a long time. It go on sale for $4 and I'd be like, fuck, I don't have money. And then it would go off sale and then I'd have money and it wouldn't be on sale. And then it'd go on sale and I'd be like, fuck, I'd go all over again. So it was a horrible, horrible cycle. But when Xbox Rewards switched over to Microsoft Rewards, I actually racked up some reward points. And so I had some credit on my account.
Mm-hmm.
And I've like stretched my $12 credit for all it was worth, and I've bought two games and DLC for Rocket League.
Nice.
Out of $12. But I bought Virginia for me today.
Nice. So far I picked up Impact Winter and Pinstripe.
Oh, Pinstripe is good.
And then it's not technically part of the sale, but it's listed in the sale stuff. I picked up Nidhogg 2.
That's also, we got to play that now.
Indeed. And I have a list. I have a list of shit that I still want. And I showed Ashley and she's like, we're fucking moving. What is your problem?
I kind of want to be on Team Ashley here, but it's a sale. And there's really good prices. Like, I actually went through the list and wrote down some of the better prices that I saw. Some of them felt were a little lackluster, and like they were prices that we typically see when these games hit sales anyway.
Yeah.
But there were a few where I was like, ooh, like Little Nightmares for $10 or with all the DLC for $15. Hellblade is on sale. One of the ones, though, that I might take advantage of, Dirt 4 is leaving Game Pass, yeah?
I think so.
It's on sale right now for $19.80.
There you go.
So if it's leaving Game Pass, my kid, number one, she likes Dirt. Like, it's her favorite franchise, period. She just loves it. And so when I was like, oh, that's leaving Game Pass, you're not going to play it anymore. And she was like, no!
Motherfucker, no!
Yeah, that would be what triggers Little Miss Southern Belle to drop an F-bomb, I'm sure.
Sorry, no more Dirt, honey. That's fucking bullshit.
This would be the one time she would have one of those teenager temper tantrums, because, yeah, like on TV shows, teenagers throw the fits and they throw shit and slam. But my kids have never done that because I know I'd beat the red out of their hair.
This fucking god.
<damn it. laughs> Take away Dirt 4 and we might finally have one of those fits.
Take it away. Ah, my dirt! I want my...
So I might cough up and pay $20 to get her Dirt 4.
I scared the shit out of all my cats banging shit right there. They all scatter. They're like, what the hell's happening? Why is he kicking the garbage bag? What is wrong with him? Is there anything on your wish list for the sale that you're looking for? Besides Dirt?
You know, unfortunately, I have most of them.
I'm eyeing up. I don't know. Hello Neighbor is still $20. I don't know if I want to do that. Jackbox 4 for $13. I might jump on that.
That's a good price. I have it already, though. But it's definitely worth the $13.
Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is only $16, down from $40. So I'm eyeing up going digital on that one.
The Ezio collection. That's on sale. And Rogue Remastered is on sale. But it's not like a catch you by surprise kind of price. It's just like, okay, well, if I wait another year. Yeah, I was like, if I wait another year, it might be Games with Gold.
Might be.
So I just don't feel obliged to buy that at the moment, even though I really want it, because I would like to finish out my absurd Assassin's Creed collection.
Your collection. And then the other two games I'm looking at are Ride and Cube 2. on Xbox.
Doom 2 is good.
Yeah. I have it on PlayStation.
Dead by on sale for $450 is a good price, too, if you missed out on that.
There's a lot of really good price. I think someone said Deus Ex Human Revolution. I think that's the one on whatever the 360 game is only $2, I think they said.
Yeah. Dead Island Definitive Edition. I think it was like the full collector's edition was only like $13 or
which
something
like
that. Which
is crazy for three games.
It really is. And I liked Dead Island. So I would be like, yeah, if I didn't have to spend all my money on school clothes this month, I'd be drowning in an even bigger backlog.
I got to find out how much money I'm going to have left over after getting gas and food tonight. Whatever I have left, I'm allowed to spend on the sale, but I want to earmark $40 of it so I could get the Mega Man X collection next week, because I'm pretty sure we're not going to get that for review.
Oh, so that's like when Ashley's like, oh, what are we going to eat on, you know, while you're moving tonight? And you're going to be like, we all get one 89-cent cheese roll up from Taco Bell. And that's it.
Oh, no. If we're doing Taco Bell, I'm getting me some goddamn nacho fries because they're back.
Nacho fries are back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nacho fries.
And if I'm going to cheap out on food, we're going to Sheetz to get two hot dogs for a dollar.
I don't know what this place is. We don't have that around here.
Do you have Wawa?
No. What is that?
It's basically a gas station that serves food.
Oh, no. We have, like, little mom-and-pop places.
Yeah.
Which is, to be fair, we get our pizza from the little mom-and-pop store here, and it's fucking amazing. It's good pizza. It's not spinach and ricotta good, but it's good for greasy gas station pizza.
Spinach. Ugh.
It's fucked up. I'm going to go eat some spinach after we do this. Just because I'm talking about it, I'm like, fucking need some spinach now.
Well, if we want to get through this, we should probably jump on to reviews, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, excited for reviews?
Speaking of dicks.
I don't want to start off a review with that line. They might not appreciate it. Speaking of dicks, first game to talk about. I don't think they would be pleased. Why are you comparing
speaking
us
of
to dicks?
Spinach.
Speaking of spinach, speaking of a total car crash of a pizza idea, first game to talk about is called Danger Zone 2. How's that?
That works.
Is that a good segue?
Yeah.
Speaking of car crashes, Danger Zone 2.
Wow.
Words. I've been doing this for over an hour now. Give me a break. Developed and published by Three Fields Entertainment, released July 13th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Danger Zone 2 takes the crash action out of the test area and onto real public roads. High-speed driving game featuring speed, boost, traffic, and crashes. Cole, what is this game?
Chaos. So this is basically the same concept as its predecessor. You have a car and you are on a highway and you are trying to gather as much speed as possible before you get to the danger zone where you literally just try to blow the fuck up out of everything. The more chaos and carnage and wreckage that you can cause, the more money you earn.
Don't say carnage. And he might show up.
That's two times. We say the third and it's all over.
It's like Beetlejuice.
So basically, you really just want to create as much of a wreckage as possible and earn as much money by damaging things as you can. And then you move on to the next area and do it all over again. There are some little shakeups to the gameplay. You have challenges before each area. Before you get to the danger zone, you have what's called the run-up.
Danger zone!
And each run-up has its own challenge, which is different for each level. So it may be something like wreck 18 cars before you get to the actual danger zone. Or if you're in a semi-truck, you may be trying to knock off passenger vans off of the highway. Or you may have an F1 car and be trying to get enough of boost that you chain it together and continuously boost till the meter is empty 3 times. So it's just different ways to kind of rack up a little extra money for and challenge yourself before you actually get to the actual destructive element. There is a hiccup, unfortunately.
And what is the hiccup?
Sometimes the physics with crashing doesn't actually work like it's supposed to. Ideally, you have to get to the danger zone and start a crash by hitting another vehicle, and then you explode your car. If you're lucky enough, you can pick up extra explosions or extra money or whatever, but you just want to chain your events so that, you know, you're making a big wreckage. But there were times where I would fly into an intersection at full speed, hit a car, and my vehicle would like 180 and just keep flying away and never start the sequence of destruction. And then I would kind of like hit an invisible wall at the end of the road and it would be like crashed and make me start all over. I broke it. I don't know how.
I'm not going to lie. That's hilarious.
It was funny. I recorded it. I did. I was like, wow, I broke this shit. The whole game is breaking shit, and I broke the shit that breaks the shit. So,
Proud of you.
In typical Cole fashion, I broke the game. Hopefully that's just something that can be patched eventually, but it did mean that sometimes I just had to start over. And if you've had a really good run up and you've completed the challenge and you've already racked up a good healthy amount of money, and then you get to the actual sequence and the game shits on you, it's kind of a depressing moment. No. I just want it to work. There is a tutorial level with 6 different levels in that, and then there's 3 different regions that you can play through, and each region has 8 more levels within it, and then there is a bonus region as well. So there's a lot of maps to play through and a lot of different scenarios. Everything is kind of modeled after different regions in the US, but the highways themselves aren't modeled after any real areas. So, you know, it has a very distinctly Americana look to the surrounding areas, but it's not anywhere that you're going to overwhelmingly recognize. That also means that it can look a little repetitive. It's like, oh, look, there's some trees. Oh, now we're in the desert. Oh, back to some trees. Because there's not any kind of landmarks or anything that you're going to recognize that kind of makes it feel like it's being shifted around. It does just look like, oh, well, there's some more highway in a different pattern this time. It would have been nice to have seen a little more from the scenery in the surrounding area, especially when you consider that there's games, even like Tour de France has, you know, meticulously modeled how the surrounding area looks. And then you got Danger Zone. It's like, well, there's literally not a building in sight.
Yeah, well, Tour de France also didn't have, you know, cars piling up and damage and crashing and all that other stuff.
Is it too much to ask for sunflower fields, Joe? I didn't think so. Oh, but there was one other hitch, too, speaking of the cars piling up and stuff. The game has a really impressive draw distance, but there was a hiccup with sometimes cars would still just materialize out of thin air. I don't know if this is an I'm on a 1S issue or not, or if other people dealt with it too, but some of the races, instead of having you just like in a regular car, I mentioned it before, you can be in a semi truck or whatever. Some of them have you in an actual F1 Formula Racer, which is really fucking cool. But you're going super fast, and it seems like at times the game can't keep up with spawning the obstacles at the speed you're going.
Yeah.
So you have the draw distance, and it's insane, and you can see cars at an intersection several hundred yards away, And then, boom, there's suddenly there's a blue minivan right in front of you. And you're like, the fuck did you even come from? So, I don't know, you know, again, that could very well just be like the 1S couldn't keep up. I don't know.
Maybe. But I know that the 1X has two different options. One is the game is in 4K and 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
The other is it's 1080p and 60 frames per second.
Yeah, and that's not an option on the S to change anything like that. So, I mean, those options are just gone for me. So I don't know if, like, the performance issues that I did run into were because of my console.
Yeah.
But
I believe the 1S is 1080p and 30 frames per second.
Probably, which would explain cars just poofing out of nowhere. Yeah. And they definitely did. And again, like I said, for a lot of instances, it's not really a big deal. But if you have a really good run going and you've completed your objective and then you turn a corner and there's a car that shouldn't have been there, that's a problem.
I'm going to throw out a complaint of my own is I wish the menus and the text were easier to read. Like, put a black border around the text to make it easier to read, because it's these bright, colorful, scenic areas with a lot of whites and clouds and light colors and white text.
White text.
And it is very hard to read. Too.
It actually took me a few minutes to even try to figure out, like, some of the settings. And I wasn't sure that settings in the menu just couldn't be seen because there was a cloud behind it.
Yeah.
And I was like, am I missing it? Or is it just not there?
No. Overall, though, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I don't remember now.
Okay. So overall, $20 on this one. Me personally, as a fan of Burnout's Crash Mode, which is what this game basically is, and the fact that they took it out of the test areas and put it into real life traffic scenarios, I give the game a buy. I fucking love it.
I'm going to give it a very highly recommended try. It. Again, I played on an S. I did have some performance issues, and that does affect how I feel about it. But I had a lot of fun, and I respect that there were so many different regions to go through. That was a lot of levels, and really the fun comes down to replaying this shit over and over and trying to get better times and getting better goals and, you know, trying to get better scores on the levels. So to have that many options to replay is really good. No. So I do give it a very recommended try. I'd like to see a patch and maybe a little tweaking for 1S players, but I'm not mad at it in any way.
I ain't mad at you.
It's very cathartic when you've been stressed out and you just want to go smash the shit out of something.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of dicks, next game to talk about is called Mugsters, developed by Raincout Games, published by Team 17, released July 17th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Aliens have taken over the planet and enslaved humanity. Only you have the know-how to drive back the dastardly threat. Free your fellow Earthlings and save the world. Cole, what is this game?
What? That summary makes it sound like there's a story to this. And, like, my whole complaint about the game is, like, I have no fucking idea what's happening here. Now, all of a sudden, I feel different. I'm like, there was rhyme and reason to this?
yeah, there was.
Because the game does not tell you jack shit. It literally throws you in with no idea of what's going on. You start in a hub world. It's very low poly 3D world, but just very lacking in details. There's not anything in the way of explanations. There's no tutorial. I know there are people who don't like to have their hands held, but at least tell me where the fuck I am. The aliens were a thing I had guessed because of other levels, and that was just the most of it. But there's no explanations going on here. The plus side is that in the hub world, you can kind of fuck around long enough that you figure out most of the controls.
Which I guess is good. It kind of has a sandbox feel to it in the hub world, so
you get
a feel for what you're doing and just fuck around. I love hub worlds because you could just dick around.
That is good. If you're not going to let, like, hold people's hands and say, throw this barrel there, then at least give them a place where they can test that shit out without affecting the game. Once you've, you know, like, mastered the art of I can pick things up and I can run and jump, then you can actually go over to these little teleporter pads. And what you do is you get teleported to a new island. So each island is its own self-contained level. And you will have three objectives, but they are optional. You don't have to carry out these tasks unless you want to unlock a time trial mode. But you should, because that's where the fun is. Because if you're not trying to accomplish these tasks, your only goal is to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And it can be very mundane. It's like, okay, well, just run to the plane and bye. And not do anything else. If you're going for time and speed, sure, that's fine. But you really want to at least explore the puzzles and try to accomplish the task. The tasks for each level are pretty similar. They tend to run the gamut of, you know, destroy a certain amount of generators or satellites. And then there will be, you know, collect these mystery crystals. And then you'll also have to save your fellow humans. Or attempt to, at least. The humans are floating in these little tanks, and you need to find a way to bust them out of there. When you do, awful. You should say sorry. I'm going to leave you in a tank, Joe.
Again.
So when you do break out your fellow humans, it doesn't take you long to figure out why they got caught in the first place, because the AI is really damn dumb. Their tracking is just really bad. And they follow you, and they'll just follow you around the map while you finish doing the other puzzles. And then once you make your getaway, they tag along. But I had to stop what I was doing to go find and save my AI an awful lot, because they were just like stuck in little crevices, or they'd walk behind a rock and then just stay there.
Like, oh, like, well, there's a rock here. Guess I'm lost. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
The concept of pathing around the rock was just not there. And I'm like, I should have left you in the tank. The fun thing about the puzzle solving is that there's really a multitude of ways to solve most of the puzzles. There's nothing that locks you down to say you have to complete task A or B at any given time. It's just, do you want to try to break down that wall with a car? Hop in the car and smash the shit out of the wall. Go for it. You'd rather throw a barrel? Go do that too. You know, there's a lot of fun ways to explore and interact and ultimately demolish the world. And I had a lot of fun with that. But like I said, the dumb AI is really the biggest hitch, because you just have to go save them from some of the most mundane shit.
Yeah. Part of me wishes levels had some kind of checkpoint system to them as well. I've had a number of levels where I would complete all the objectives, get all the crystals, save all the people, and then I would just like accidentally fall into the water, and you got to start all over.
Yeah, there is no checkpoint at all. It's just succeed or don't.
Yeah.
One other thing, there is multiplayer, which is I'm the biggest queen of more indie games need multiplayer. So I'm really, really happy for that. But I was a little let down, because when it comes to puzzle games, you tend to want the multiplayer to give you a reason to play with friends. You want the levels to be a little different. You want there to need to be some kind of co-op involved to actually succeed. This is just more like drop in, drop out of the single player. It's all the exact same levels. There's nothing that dictates that you need a friend to get through it. You could do it on your own and be fine. If you've got a friend or a random joins you, they exist, and that's about it. So I would have liked to have seen a little more thought put into creating something more co-op directed for the multiplayer side. Maybe we can get that in some kind of future patch or something, some DLC. I wouldn't be mad at it. But it is a shame that it's just like, well, let's do this again.
Well, as it stands at $15, what do you think of it?
I do give it a buy it. I had a lot of fun. The puzzles are really interesting. A tutorial would be nice. Not dumb AI would be nice. But it is still a lot of fun. There are a ton of levels. You're going to spend forever going through these puzzles. If you do successfully beat everything, go back and play the time trials then. And there's plenty to keep you coming back.
Nice. I'm going to flip-flop with you. I'm giving it a recommended try. I think it's a lot of fun, but there's just enough hitches that I can't blindly recommend people dropping $15 on it. Maybe check... God, what is with my throat today? Maybe check out a video, see if it's up your alley. If it is, you're going to love it. If not, I don't think this game is going to sell you on puzzle platformers. So,
yeah. Fine.
All right,
but it has online.
Yeah, it does. I'm okay. I'm still giving it a recommended try. It's still a good verdict. Don't give me shit. Next game to talk about is called Guts and Glory, developed by Hackjack Productions, published by Tiny Build, released July 19th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99, also releasing out of early access on PC. A game about father and son riding their bicycle through obstacle courses of death and other fun family experiences. Oh my God, this game. First what? Off, did you watch anybody play it?
No, not yet.
Oh my God. So I want so bad to have someone to talk about this game with.
I believe this is in my entertainment lineup for tonight.
This is basically a mixture of something like Trials or Descenders, where you're riding a bike, and Goat Simulator, where it's just batshit crazy, intentionally janky. I mean, it was developed by one guy, so it's kind of rough around the edges. And then you have insane violence and gore. You are on a bicycle, or, you know, they have other characters in the game. You could be in a car, you could be on a four-wheeler, you could be on a bike with someone in a wheel or like a wagon behind you. It's just, you're on a vehicle, you're on something, and you have to get through an obstacle course of spikes and buzzsaws and hooks and mines and cannons, and just, you need to get from checkpoint to checkpoint and try not to die. And you will die. You will die a lot in this game, and you're going to laugh the entire time you're dying because of how absurd and crazy it is. Like I mentioned, it's janky and rough around the edges. The controls are going to be goofy. The physics are going to be goofy. But oh my God, this is such a hard game to describe, because it's like trying to explain Goat Simulator to someone, where it's like, oh, you're a goat, but you run around and it's kind of shitty, but on purpose. And it's funny because of that. It's very, I don't know. I don't know. How the fuck do you describe a game like that to someone?
This is one of those moments where you wish we weren't podcasting, but like you actually showed the game while we talked about it so that it made more sense.
This is one of those games that requires a video aspect to it, and we don't do that because it's audio only. The game is hilarious, though. It is so over the top. It is so crazy. They have options in there to set the blood effects all the way up, or, you know, they have a gore effect that it starts off on the lower setting, but what I obviously bumped it all the way up. When you hit a buzzsaw, limbs go flying. You could see intestines hanging out. Your head goes flying. There's levels where you can run into a buzzsaw and chop your leg off and still continue on your bike. I don't know how you can pedal your bicycle without legs, but I've completed stages without legs. Your son rides on the bike with you, or a companion rides with you. You can very easily lose them and it doesn't matter at all. They're just gone. Like, you don't need to complete the stages with the people, with both people or all the people. If you, like, there's the Yang family, which drives a car, and you could just plow into things and half the family members go flying, and it's whatever. As long as you're there and in enough of a piece that you're alive, you can complete the stage. And there's a lot of stages in the game. There's a whole bunch of different chapters. Each chapter has, like, I don't know, 8 or so stages to it. So I want to say there's like 50, 60 stages, something like that in the game. So there's a lot to do. Obviously, things get more and more difficult as you progress through. There's some hidden stages you could find in the game. They have a hall of, I think it's just a hall of fame or whatever the hall is, that it's basically a shrine dedicated to all the Kickstarter backers, which I thought was pretty cool. There's hidden stages in there that you could find. Everything in this game wants to kill you. Everything in this game will kill you. It's just hilarious. It is stupidly goofy fun, and I can't stop playing it. I think it's something that is best played in spurts. Like, I've played for an hour and then I've stopped, and then I played for an hour and I stopped. If this is something that you try to marathon for 5 hours, it's going to wear out its welcome fairly easily. But something that you just play in bursts as a stress reliever, or just something crazy to show off to your friends. Like, look how batshit crazy this is. Yeah, it's similar to Octodad, I Am Bread. It's in that category of game that is just kind of janky, kind of rough around the edges, very heavily physics based, but the physics aren't really on point. I've had my bike sideways on the ground and continued to pedal, and it just made itself upright again magically.
Yeah.
I don't know. Controls I wish were a little bit better. I've had, I don't know if it's just the vehicle I'm using, but I would have drift in different directions. It would be hard to line up certain jumps when you're trying to do them. I wish controls were a little tighter, a little more refined. Visually, it's good enough. It serves its purpose. Audio, it serves its purpose. Everything in this game serves its purpose well enough to enjoy it. And as long as you can get around the fact that it's kind of intentionally janky, rough around the edges, I think you're going to have a good time. $15, I give it a very recommend. Try it. Watch video gameplay. If you are going into this blind, you might come out very disappointed. But if you go into it knowing what you're going to be coming into, and you're all right with that, you're going to love it, because it is just over the top, ridiculous, bloody, gory, goofy, crazy fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Frost, developed by Jerome Bowden and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati, released July 17th on PS4, 19th on the Switch, 20th on Xbox for $12.99. Frost is a deck-building solo survival card game set on a harsh, frozen world ravaged by a lethal storm. You must lead a group of nomads in search of the refugee, a haven... in search of the refuge, my bad, a haven away from the Frost's icy grip. Manage your cards wisely to stay alive and make it all the way to the refuge. Cole, what is this one?
This is basically a card building game, like the whole deck building, which is not typically a game genre that I'm generally interested in. I played Monster Slayers a little while back for a review, and it kind of changed my outlook on this genre, though. So when I saw this one, I had to try it, and I'm so glad I did. This might have turned out to have been one of my favorite games this week. Frost is incredibly challenging. You basically start in the beginning. All you can do is just play the base game on easy mode, and you're still going to lose a fucking lot. Basically, you have a deck of cards, and you have food, wood, which is your materials, and survivors.
You got wood.
You got wood. So you have food, wood, and survivors. And the layout of the game is just one simple screen. You can see your character on the left, who has a couple of lives, typically start with 4, although some of the scenarios change that up. And you're dealt your cards. You will need, for each area that you travel to, you have to have a certain amount of supplies and people to progress to the next area. So your options are to send your survivors out by basically dragging that card to a certain area on the screen. You send your survivors out to try to find more materials. Sometimes it works. Sometimes they just come back fatigued. Sometimes they die and they're removed from your deck. It's just a crapshoot, just like it really would be if you were sending people out into, you know, the icy wilderness to try to find food and wood. Sometimes you luck out and they bring back extra survivors for you. Like I said, the main goal is to just try to collect enough materials to progress to the next area. So when you've used up all of the cards that were currently dealt to you, you have the ability to end the night. This triggers the frost counter, however. The frost is a pressing storm that is always behind you. In the very beginning, you start with it being 8 days behind you. But every day that you, every time you end your turn, yeah, you get to start with a new deck, a new hand of cards, but you lose a day off your frost counter.
Mm.
So once that reaches zero, the storm catches up to you and you're dead. You have to start over. However, if you manage to progress from one area to the next, you get to add 1 day back to your frost counter. So the frost counter is represented like a dial up in the top of the screen. And every time you rest or you end your turn, you lose a day. And every time you progress forward, you add a day. You can never have more than 8 days between you and a storm, though. So even if you're doing really well, 8 is your max. You can never just like stack up a bunch of extra days.
So it's all about staying one step ahead of the storm.
Basically. There are other encounters that will happen as you move through the areas, however. So you may reach an area that will have an event like a wolf will be there. So if you don't find the materials to craft a spear to fight the wolf, and yet you try to travel, that wolf will take away one of your lives. So you start typically with 4. If you do that too many times, you're going to be dead, regardless of whether the frost is fine or not. You also have the option of not taking away from your overall health, but sacrificing one of your survivors to the wolf instead. You may also encounter other types of events, like you may find farmers and they say, give us some of your survivors and we'll give you food in return. Or you may find a shaman who can let you trade food, or you, if you have the ability to just sweet talk them, you might just be able to sweet talk them into giving you a little extra health back. So it's all about planning your trip and getting from, you know, the very beginning to the refuge without losing everybody and everything and still managing to use your materials wisely. You know, you have to decide, can I afford to rest today to wipe out these fatigue cards so that I can have a fresh hand full of useful cards for the next day? Or am I in a position where I just have to do what I can and the fatigue is just there? Or do I have enough wood to sacrifice for building a weapon? Or do I just need to get the fuck out of here and, and deal with the wolf chopping up one of my people? So it's really all strategy and planning based to try to get through. The funny thing is, the first night that I played it, I was so into it, but I was not beating it at all. And I said, you have to beat it on easy just to start with. And you can't play anything else until you beat the main campaign on easy.
Wow.
The more times that you try and fail, though, you continue to unlock additional cards that can be added to your deck. So yes, there is the spear that can take down the wolf, but you might be able to unlock a card for gathering, which will let you pay 2 survivor cards in order to get 4 more supply cards. you start to trade in and trade up, and you get those unlocks the more that you play and the more you progress, until eventually you find that, oh, I'm not dying 30 paces away from the refuge. I'm dying with just 5 or 6 places to go. The most heartbreaking is when you die and you're only it says distance to refuge 1. And you know that all you have to do is just make it 1 more, and then you die. And it will happen, and it's damning, and you just feel so stressed. And I remember playing it the first night. I played for like 4 hours, just over and over and over. I will figure this out. I'm going to do this. And then I couldn't do it. And I gave up and I went to bed. And then I loaded it up the next morning and I did it my first try.
All it takes is sometimes you just got to step away for a little bit and come back to it.
That's it. And then once you do finally beat it on easy, you unlock extra difficulties to keep trying, but you also unlock scenarios. And this is where the game really gets twisted on its head, because then you have the ability to play different modes, where there's one where you have a meditator, and because they're so calm, the frost never catches you. So you don't have to deal with the frost counter, and the goal is just to make it 50 to make it through 50 places, as opposed to trying to get to the refuge and not ever actually having to worry. There's another scenario where you have to make it to the refuge, but you have to have 4 pets with you. There's another one where you have your family and you can't use them as sacrificial lambs. You can't use them for cannibalism cards. You can't use them for, you know, your idea cards. So you have to protect your family. You have to bring in extra survivors that you can use if you're running low on food and need to chop up somebody.
So there's a good amount to do in the game.
Yes. It seems like, you know, when you think, oh, it's a single player card game, there's not a lot of options for where it could go. But you would be really surprised at how much effort has gone into creating different scenarios and sequences, to where every time you do a run, you feel like you're progressing and accomplishing something, even if you don't beat it.
Yeah.
Which is really, you know, a big challenge for a game like this. The art style in this game is gorgeous. It's a very simplistic, sketchy kind of art style, but it has a little bit of like a watercolor effect to it as well. And it's just genuinely pretty, even though it's very minimal. The really cool thing is that you can actually choose day or night mode. So the game is basically very white because you're in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of detail or anything because you are in this barren wasteland of a snowstorm. But you can, if you're playing at night and that bright white light is kind of a pain, then you can go into the options and play, and it will flip the colors to the negative so that you're playing against a black screen. And it's a little easier on you visually. So that was a really thoughtful thing from the developers. But all in all, though, I just really enjoyed this game. And I hope people give it a shot, because despite being something as simple as a card game, it's really fleshed out. The scenarios are really cool and a lot of a challenge.
Cool. So $13 on it. What do you think?
Buy this. Buy it now.
Okay.
Buy it for a friend.
Fine, then. I will.
Buy this game. This was seriously, I played a lot of shit this week, and this was easily one of my most favorite ones, just because I wanted to sit down at night and not have to think about what I was doing, other than just to kind of get through the scenarios. And I could just sit and casually play this and calm down. And it was a lot of fun.
Nice. Next game to talk about is called The Long Reach, developed by Painted Black Games, published by Merge Games, released July 18th on Xbox One for $14.99. At its heart, The Long Reach is an adventure game. Closer inspection also reveals it's a thrilling horror story flavored with sci-fi ideology, psychological context, and a skeptical view on the human psyche. I know you covered this one before on PC, but now it's on Xbox, and I'm wondering, what do you think of it still?
I was going to lead in with, do you ever get deja vu? Because the funny thing is, like, do you want The Long Reach? And I'm like, yeah.
It sounds and familiar. I totally forgot you covered it, too.
And then, like, the next day I was like, wait a second. This is one of those rare games that I played on Steam.
Yeah.
And my computer didn't explode.
So, as a refresher, what is this game, quickly?
So, this is a 2D, it's not a side scroller per se, but it is a pixel art style horror game with some really, really weird shit. This takes psychological horror to an extreme. So if you're not comfortable with a game that's going to fuck your brains out, you might just want to go ahead and ignore this one. But if you like testing your mental capacity, here you go. it's set in a scenic little town in New Hampshire, and you start with the story by being introduced to a slacker dude named Calvin. Calvin is on a mission to go to the grocery store because his girlfriend is tired of him being a slob. She just wants him to do shit for himself. That seems all well and good, but shit goes down at the corner store, and suddenly we all realize why Calvin didn't want to go shopping. After that little brief stint, we're switched to a research laboratory where we take over a dude named Stuart. And Stuart is
It's not just me.
Oh, contagious. Participating in a research study, and during that study, he blacks out. When he comes to, the shit has hit the proverbial fan. Nothing is as it seems anymore. His coworkers seemingly have lost their minds, and shit just gets plain weird. So we're left with the need to try to piece together what's going on, because we have no context for literally anything going on. And the way that you do this is by finding things in the world, almost like a point and click, but not quite. You need to piece together objects in the world and manipulate them in ways that are seemingly illogical, if that makes sense. Some of the weirdest solutions to game mechanics I have ever seen are in this game. And you're just, the whole time, you're like, I don't know how this is supposed to work, but it does. Like, there's one sequence where you basically cut up a dog bone and use it in an elevator to push the up button in the elevator to make the elevator work. And the whole point is basically, it's not supposed to make sense. And you're never really sure if you've just gone crazy because you thought to solve the puzzle that way, or if you're a genius because you thought to solve the puzzle that way. You're just like, did I succeed or did I fail?
Oh, God. So how different is the game compared to when you played it on Steam? Or is it pretty much the same?
It's exactly the same. There is no difference whatsoever. It's still the same quirky. If anything, I do feel like the controls are a little better suited to an Xbox controller than keyboard and mouse. That may just be my own personal preference, though, because I hate playing ship keyboard mouse.
Oh, me too.
We've gone over that a bunch of times. Yeah, so I feel like maybe I just thought that the controls were better merely because it was my preferred platform. But it is effective as a controller game. for me, and I thought it played better actually. But it will have you questioning yourself and the people around you.
Nice. So,
but 15, story-wise, okay.
Cool. So $15 on this. What do you think?
This is a buy it. I think I only gave it a try it my first time around, but I just enjoyed it far better on console than trying to fuck with keyboard and mouse. And
it just feels right with the controller.
It just felt better, yeah, and just felt right. So I do give it a buy it. It is a really crazy story, and it's not going to appeal to everybody. I will say, even though I give it a buy it, if you know that you don't have the mind space for psychological horror, take that as your clue to maybe not listen to me on this one.
GTFO.
But yeah, if you really like games that are going to leave you going, what the fuck did I just do? Which is my favorite kind of shit. And that's when I'm at my happiest.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have a good time.
Happy as a pig in shit, right?
No, we say a pig in a poke.
Mine's funnier.
Yeah, it is. We're anyway. Southern, we're polite. We don't say shit in plat.
Anyway, speaking of dicks, this, you started this, by the way.
It's going to go for, this is how I make my mark on the podcast and change it for the good.
And speaking of cocks.
Yeah, it's a happy chicken, one.
With the rooster crowing. Final game to talk about tonight is called The Path of Modus, developed and published by Michael Arts, released July 17th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Deluxe Edition also available on PS4 and Steam for $17.99 and includes the soundtrack. For generations, a village of goblins has been trapped inside a mysterious forest. Anyone who attempts to leave returns hopeless and defeated. Determined to break new ground, a young goblin named Modus plans to build a series of bridges through the forest. Will you find a way through the life's forest, or, like others, be lost in its depths with no will to continue? Cole, what's this one?
So this is, again, another 2D adventure game. I don't know if you technically 2.5D, because there are some places where you can, like, press up and go into other buildings and stuff.
It's just 2D.
But it's still basically 2D. You are following the story of a little goblin named Modus. I bet you couldn't guess that.
Shocking. Based on the description I read.
But it is, essentially, it's a coming-of-age tale, if you will. You guide Modus through the three phases of his life: childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. And throughout the entire story, he's being ragged on, being told he can't do this. Nobody leaves the forest. Just get a job in the factory like everybody else. And it's basically a metaphor for the struggle of trying to be a working artist compared to everybody thinking you should have a desk job at a factory. You know, like, it's not at all shy about the parallels it's trying to draw. And that's fine. There's a lot of important parallels being drawn between the needs to sacrifice to be considered an adult and just accepting the world for what it is, or do you push through and overcome your obstacles to achieve your dream? It's a very touching, charming little story.
What about the gameplay?
I'm getting there. Gameplay is very simplified. There is a little bit of platforming. There are enemies you will encounter. Basically, the other goblins will stand in your way and hurl hurtful words at you. Mostly, this boils down to the word nope flying across the screen at you. Not a lot of variety. They don't overly insult you, and except for the ones that you actually have dialogue with. But the way you deal with this is by shouting back, hey.
Hey, listen. Hey.
Yeah, hey, it's just, listen. Hey, hey, every time you do anything. So, there is a trick to it. The ones that are the enemies, their words will be color-coded. So obviously you'll want to hit B to say, hey, back in red, if it's going to say red so that it blocks it from hitting you. But likewise, you'll need to use a different color than the one that they're going to shout with if you want to hit the enemy and make them go poof. It's not particularly complicated, but it can be frustrating because it seems like there are times where no matter how well you hit that button, you still get hit with the word nope upside the head and you have to poof and try it again. Yeah. But it's not problematic because it's not like you get thrown back to a checkpoint a way back and you have to repeat it. You just spawn right back where you were and keep trying over and over. So it's really just a matter of your own persistence. And you're like, whatever, I'll try it again because I'm still here.
Yeah, this isn't a game intended to be super difficult or anything.
No. Once you get past all of that, otherwise you're relying on the puzzles for gameplay.
The bridge building.
This is where I had the most fun. Like, I'd rather have the game just be all of the puzzles. The puzzles were great because you have squares or circles or some kind of shape, and they'll have numbers in them. And basically, you use the little paintbrush that your father has given you to draw lines between the circles and the squares to eventually make the shape of a bridge. The trick to the puzzle is that only as many lines as the number indicates can touch that specific spot. So if you have a circle with a 4 and you've got a square with a 3, only 4 lines can touch the circle and only 3 lines can touch the square. If you've got the correct number of lines coming and going from the different nodes, then it turns green and you can figure out where the rest of the lines need to go to eventually draw the bridge. Otherwise, you just have to keep erasing in trial and error until you get the right pattern. I got through these really quickly.
I struggled on a couple of them. Some of the bigger ones with the higher numbers. These puzzles didn't click for me like they did for you. I made them through them. I just struggled on a couple.
One of the things that with the puzzles for me is that I worked basically on one side at a time. And so once you've got half of it and everything is already lit up green, you're like, yeah, I'm just going to duplicate that on the other side and you're done. So it meant that I was rolling through these fairly quickly. Which leads us to the point where my first playthrough only took me about 45 minutes.
Wow.
And that was with finding all of the notes and collectibles and exploring all the different areas. I have heard some people have taken longer, but even still, I would say if you really struggle with the puzzles, you're probably going to look at about an hour and a half for your first playthrough. And that's if you're slow and you struggle. Yeah. That said, this is a game that is meant to have 2 playthroughs. There are different ways that it can end. And once you've played through it the first time, the game challenges you to go back through and replay without actually attacking anybody to change the course. So rather than fighting back when there are goblins hurling insults at you, you want to take the high road and get the high road medals. There are 24 of these where you have encounters with other goblins, but you don't make them go poof by saying something mean to them. So it's basically a pacifist run. That's taking me far longer than the first because I just want to tell them fuck off and get out of my head and let me go paint my bridges. There are extra puzzle bridges and bridge puzzles that you can't encounter until you're on that second playthrough as well. So that will add a little bit of extra time. You could probably spend, 3 to 4 hours in the whole game.
Which is pretty good overall.
It is pretty good. I think the shortness of it is both potential source of contention, but also a source of glee for people who are just achievement hunters and want to get through it. And realistically, it's a two-man show for this game, and they've done a fantastic job with the art. They've done a fantastic job with the music. I really recommend. I wish Xbox had a way to buy soundtracks, because this one is really good, and I really enjoyed the music. The story is, I mentioned charming already, but it really just feels like the best way to describe it. It's really a charming story. If maybe the gameplay with the platforming stuff isn't the most solid, because there are times where some of those jumps just fucking don't work.
Yeah. And I'll say, it's good to see a more wholesome game after all the violent games that we've covered on the show, all the intense games. This is very much a wholesome, intended for an all ages kind of audience type of game.
Yeah, it really is. And this is one where, like, you could see sitting down with your kids and talking about the content of the story, and, you know, how Modus has to decide which path he's going to take. Is he going to take the high road? You know, is he going to get through and push through the forest, or is he just going to be like his father and settle for what life has to offer? Yeah. It really is like a dialogue opener. If you're a parent and have kids that you want to have that kind of talk with, here's a good way to bring it up. Break that ice. Yeah. Don't segue with, speaking of dicks, segue with, hey, remember when Modus didn't know if he was going to be an artist, or
you're getting bullied. How would you deal with bullies?
Right.
Stuff like that.
Is it better to fight back, or is it better to, and even some adults really need to have that conversation with themselves too. So I really recommend it on that regard.
So $15, what do you think of it?
I give it a really recommended try. It's a notable effort. I wish that some of the platforming controls were a little tighter and that I wouldn't just randomly fall off of platforms. And I wish there were more of the bridge puzzles, because those were great. But otherwise, it was still a good experience.
I agree. It's short, but it's sweet and it's charming, and I really enjoyed it.
Did you find the URL?
No, I didn't.
There is a hidden URL, and if you go to it, it redirects you to a YouTube page with the developer talking about his experiences of becoming a game developer, despite it not being the most ideal circumstance.
Oh, man, it's now it's something to go back and look for.
Yeah, it's very incredibly heartwarming, and it's also very informational. Like, I hope that there are people who aspire to be developers who see that, and maybe, I've mentioned before, my daughter wants to be a developer, and I actually sent the link to her and was like, hey, you should check this out. So
nice. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to Joe for coming on and chatting with us. That was really a lot of fun, and the game is batshit crazy, insane, and worth checking out. Not sure how you feel about that one.
Yeah, I agree. I had a blast with it. I really did. I'm looking forward to co-op, because I want to drag somebody else into that insanity with me.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have to do that instead of the Division. Maybe we'll co-op on that instead of the Division next time.
Why does it have to be instead? Why can't it be as well as?
Because we can't play two games simultaneously.
Want to bet?
I mean,
don't test me. I like challenges.
True. I do have two Xboxes I could use.
I do too.
Picture in picture. Oh, wait, we could use Snap Mode if it still existed.
Aw, rip.
I'm sad. But on that note, speaking of dicks, that is it for this episode. Cole, do you have any final words to end it?
Play games and have fun.
I really thought you were just going to say dicks.
I know, but I just wanted to throw things off, because I felt like dicks was the expected response. And dicks is like an expected response from me anyway.
Dicks.
Dicks.
Thank you. Say Dagsy Tags. Say Dagsy Frogs.